I think Tevez going to Juventus, what a coup that was for me. I mean,
on a head-to-head battle, Atletico Madrid can do more damage to Barcelona than the other way around.
Either he's really blind or he's fixing the match. I can't see it any other way.
I'm trying to get Sir Bob on my side here by saying City will win the Premier League.
It is an upset. You would expect Man United to go and win there.
Over $1 billion was paid in transfer fees between the clubs in Europe.
It's football. It's damn football. Like Ferguson said, football. Bloody marvellous.
Yeah, well, the celebration was, I can't believe I just scored against Mexico.
At one point, Parma, I think it's only like 224 players under contract.
Hey, they're going to throw me out of here, fellas. You're going to get me arrested on your show.
If you're a serious talent, you're going back and you're playing for Santos. You know, you're going back to play for, like, in Argentina for River Plate or Boca Juniors, or you're going to Europe.
He looked like the Ryan Giggs of old. He was more creative than any player on the pitch. He made Mata look stupid. He made Rooney look silly.
Now, the Premier League is what the most exciting league out there. I think it's probably the best marketed league without a question.
When you look at the draw for the Champions League, you kind of say, well, all the pieces kind of fell into place for everybody except City.
I am your host, Joe Uccello.
Sir Bob,
Mike Orr. My co-host, Rob Rojas. My trusted co-host, Ben the Machine.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome to episode 237 of Low Limit Football on this 18th of March, 2019, on the Beyond the Pitch and FNX Media Networks. I'm your host, Joe Uccello, and tonight we have our final eight in the Champions League and Europa League. We're going to discuss the best matchups to come in the next round. We have a new head coach at Roma with Eusebio Di Francesco sacking and the tinkerer himself, Claudio Ranieri, stepping in. What does this mean for Roma? We're going to discuss that tonight. An old familiar face returns to the Santiago Bernabeu as Santiago Solari is sacked in favor of Zinedine Zidane. What does this mean for Los Blancos as they move forward trying to stay in the European spots in La Liga? And last of the unbeatens is finally beaten as Juventus drops a 2-0 result in Bologna. What does that mean for the team, the Capocannonieri race, and more? We're going to discuss that with 442 Bleacher Report and Flow Sports' own Adam Digby, who will be joining us tonight. Let me get my co-host in here, Mr. Roberto Rojas. Looks like we might be watching a match on Friday, huh?
It's going to be a really interesting game. And, hey, like I said, I think everything ties back to the two nations. And to be respectful, Joe, I mean, these are two nations that I'm excited to see. But let me ask you this.
Yeah.
What do you think about people asking and tweeting their favorite teams from all around the country, from all around the world? Sorry.
Interesting. You know, it was interesting. I know that you sent that over to me. I don't know if you were the one that originated with that or if it was World Football Index. Who I saw tweeted, I could care less about the timeline, but it's an interesting thought of who likes who where. I've seen some strange results. I've seen some weird choices. I've seen people.
You love the obscure results too.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. You know, I didn't notice that I had to follow, like, because I answered and I didn't know that I had to follow a certain protocol. Like, I didn't add a Brazil, and I probably should have added a Brazil. And I don't know that I have a favorite Brazilian team. Maybe Cruzeiro.
Cruzeiro?
Yeah, maybe them. But you know, Pele played at Santos, right? I mean,
yeah, he did.
You know, I might be more inclined to play them. But again, I don't follow the Brazilian league nearly as closely as I should. You know, for me, Boca River, I've always kind of sided with Boca. I'm certainly not as violent about the choice as maybe some people might be, but I did take Boca in that one. And then, you know, there's some of the usual suspects, like, you know, when you go to the Netherlands, I think everyone wants to pick Ajax, right?
Well, some people have PSV, some people would pick Feyenoord.
Right, but for the most part, the majority of them would definitely be Ajax, and I don't know if that's a familiarity thing, especially given the Champions League, or if
it's kind of similar to what you think in Portugal as well. It's either Porto or Benfica,
right?
Usually,
or Sporting. Sporting would be the third one as well. So, you know, but then the it was fun to see the gamut, like, in the Big Five, right? And although, you know, not for nothing, but Ligue 1 kind of fell into that same mold with PSG. Most were.
Oh, you got your occasional Marseille.
You did.
Times.
You did.
Occasional Lyon.
Yep, absolutely. But for the most part, it was heavy there. But I think the other leagues kind of filtered around. I mean, I saw plenty of Atleti responses in La Liga, which I thought was pretty cool.
Rightly so. They are really a good team to watch. At least recently they have been.
I don't remember. Who did you pick for Germany?
I picked Dortmund.
And I took Dortmund too. Yeah, I'd say if I had to back a team, it would be Dortmund. It wouldn't be Bayern. But I certainly enjoy watching Bayern as much as anybody. So,
and speaking of that, we have a big race over there in Germany, don't we?
Yeah, I mean, are they? They're still level. They're still
it's
level.
Still level, but you have a team that with just a slight advantage.
Yeah, yeah, just on the goals, right? With with Bayern with the explosion this weekend,
right? Rodriguez with the hat trick.
That was pretty crazy, but. Yeah, and that's going to come down, like we'd said a couple weeks ago, that race, I think, is going to come down to that Der Klassiker that's coming up sometime in April.
Yep.
I think that's where the decisions are going to be made in that league, and it's going to be fun to watch these two teams kind of keep pace, but I think the fact that that match exists allows a little bit of quote-unquote sloppiness where a team could be knocked out. You know, before they get to that game, or a team can lose a match or even drop points. I think though for the most part, you're gonna have to see those two teams keep pace with each other. I don't think it's gonna work out any other way from that. So
100%.
Let's do this. We're gonna change things up just slightly tonight, and we're gonna do trivia in a minute. So before we get to trivia, let's do our opening thoughts topic, because I think this is a great topic to discuss tonight. It is the fact that Zinedine Zidane makes his return to the Santiago Bernabeu, taking over at Real Madrid for Santiago Solari, who was sacked. Reportedly, he has a 300 million euro budget that he can spend in the summer window, which is wow. Although now that this number has been released and the players that are being linked to Madrid are just ridiculous. It's funny, Rob. Somebody posted that they listed like Hazard, Dybala, Icardi. I mean, there was like a million names.
You can't even do that in fucking FIFA.
Well, here's the thing. They listed all the names and go, that's not 300 million, that's 1.5 billion. So figure it out, people. What do you want? So, and he's already made the one move with Militao from Benfica coming over.
Porto.
Coming over and in the summer, who's going to come over by reports the deal is done. Great piece of business on Porto, by the way. They signed him from Brazil for 8 million euro, and then they sell him for 50 in a matter of 8 months. I mean, just awesome business.
And that's kind of the custom that, you know, the Portuguese league has been able to do, is try to, you know, buy off talent young for a reasonable amount of price and then sell it off for a much more expensive price.
Yeah, no, I agree. I think it's pretty, you know, it stays in the context of what Portuguese and Dutch teams for that matter do. But I would like to see Porto this time turn that money into something. You know, and I don't want to get too far off a tangent, but I want to see them turn it into something where they really do take that club to the next level and maybe get a little further than just this round, this quarterfinal.
Mm. Well, yeah, they have a really interesting tie against Liverpool, so anything can happen.
They sure do. I mean, at this point, you know, it's home and away. It's two matches and that's it. But so let's go back to Real Madrid, because I don't want to get too far off pace. We saw Real Madrid. We saw Zidane take over in the first match this weekend. Where he did bring Isco back in, he brought Marcelo back in. You start to look at the way he wants to build this team, the way he wants to move forward. You know, what does this mean for? I think even Keylor Navas got the start over Thibaut Courtois, where the reports were that Courtois, or at least when Zidane was there, kind of stressed the fact that he did not want Courtois on the team because they originally were trying to get him the first time. So now you wonder if there's going to be a little bit of a rift there, and if Courtois might be the odd man out to Alex Goldberg's you know, delight. But you know, what does Zidane need to do, Rob? I want to throw that to you first. What does Zidane need to do here now that he's come back in? And actually, you know, before we even answer that question, given that he won three straight Champions Leagues, would you have stepped back into this role, especially this late in the season?
Well, I think you have to really look at, already, like you said, the kind of reputation that he's already gave at Real Madrid. Obviously, a successful player during his time. Obviously, a good coach. So, successful coach in the way that he's won three Champions League. But now comes the big question. Because, obviously, Real Madrid have been known for being, you know, very good, and have been for many, many years. But now, you look at this team post-Ronaldo. Obviously, you see the big effect that the team has had without him, to the delight of Juventus and of course, Barcelona, obviously. So now, I think that's the big challenge. I think that's the challenge that Zidane wants to make. And he's still a relatively young coach. You know, sure. Any other manager who, you know, had came up on top and won three Champions Leagues, you know, would perhaps ruin his reputation. But in the end, for Zidane, the only direction he could possibly go is down. He can't go up any further after winning three Champions Leagues. So you can't really say to him, oh, but he has to really prove it as a coach. No, I mean, he already has. The big question, of course, is going to see how he will prove. And it's actually a Real Madrid that is in a rebuilding process. I mean, let's be fair. I think the era of dominance that they've really had over the last 5 years is over. I mean, that goes without saying. The Ajax game proved that. So now comes Zidane, obviously a coach with a huge ambition to try and rebuild Real Madrid from the not exactly the bottom up, or at least try to do something with the team that could really compete with the Barcelonas and Atletis, and obviously with all the other European teams in the world, and get back to the way that they were. I think that's just the way Real Madrid are programmed to win the treble, to win the Champions League, La Liga, whatever. That's exactly what they're doing. For Zidane, now the big question comes. All right, what does he need to do if he is giving this $300 million budget to essentially do whatever he wants, and he's already wasted 50, so he's on 250. So now he has to see, all right, what can I get rid and what can I get to help this team compete so that Barcelona and the other teams don't win and that we could actually win a treble? Because I realize Real Madrid have never won a treble. They have never won three. They have not won three titles.
Right.
You know, so that's something that he desperately, I'm sure, wants to do. Obviously, the Champions League, in general, I think to win the treble is a must every season. That goes without saying. Mm. So now, what does he do? He has to get rid of the deadwood that has really, you know, hampered the team. I think the obvious ones are going to have to be players like Gareth Bale, Karim Benzema, you know, even to an extent, Luka Modric, Toni Kroos, Marcelo, all of them who are already at the rough patch of 30. Even maybe you have to start thinking what to do with Sergio Ramos, because, you know, even though he is the captain of the team, you would think that the recent attitude that he's portraying is not something that a captain needs to bring. And I understand that he's already been successful and whatnot, but, you know, times are changing and it's time to be more pragmatic. So I think that's what Zidane is self-conscious of. He still has youth to his disposal. He obviously wants to use the potential of players like Isco and Vinicius Jr., you know, Asensio that's still there. Obviously, they got Eder Militao. I think he's like 21 last I checked. So that's another big step. So now, what does he do? He's going to look out for superstar, for Galacticos, essentially. You know, rumors of players like Hazard and Neymar and Mbappe and those kind of players to really get this team moving forward and to make them compete, to essentially make Real Madrid great again, just to use a little joke. But that's essentially it. I think that's the challenge that Zidane has to prove, and to prove to his critics that he can do much better as a manager and not have won all of this, and to win trophies without having to depend on a player like Cristiano Ronaldo.
Right. The goal here now for Zidane obviously in the immediate future is to maintain his lead. Right now he's 8 points ahead of Getafe in fourth place. He's 10 points ahead of Alaves, which would lead to the Europa League position. So for the most part, with 10 matches to play, fairly safe there. There's no other Copa del Rey. There's no Champions League for him anymore. There's no other competitions to worry about. Just the everyday, you know, Saturday-Sunday matchup that he would have to face. That's really all he's got left, and that's going to be the focus. Also, the focus for Zidane is, what do I have? What do I identify as deadwood, as the term you used? And What pieces do I need to bring in? I think he has a little bit of a feel for what the deadwood is already. I mean, he hasn't been gone that long. He's only been gone since June. So so I think he has a good idea. I think like you said, a couple of names. Amazingly, talk about a fall from grace. Luka Modric went from one of the best players in the world, just last July, to probably something that is a little more mediocre than anything else. It's funny, you know, talk to Nima Tavale on the side. He was rumored, Modric was rumored to go to Inter, and Nima will tell you, word for word, I'm glad we didn't purchase him because he's kind of had a huge step off. Toni Kroos, kind of the same idea. You start to wonder about Casemiro too, getting all that mileage and what does that do, especially a guy like Casemiro. The hard-nosed style of play that he plays, is it time to maybe replace him or start to cure his understudy? I think Benzema is definitely one of them. I wonder about Gareth Bale. I don't know that Gareth Bale is the quote-unquote deadwood, because by all reports, Bale and Zidane have a very good relationship, a relationship that I think has continued even though he wasn't there. So I think from that standpoint, I think the Bale part, I think, will stay. But now the question becomes, who's coming in? You know, obviously with everything going on with Mauro Icardi in at Inter, I think it's almost a lock, Rob, that you can count on Icardi being in an all white uniform.
Doesn't that sound like a great fit to you? Sorry, I know you want to be serious, but doesn't that sound like a great fit? Like a player like him coming to Real Madrid, like all the personality that he brings.
Absolutely, 100%. You know, I mean, the guy. Attitude wise is a Galactico, you know. Now the question is that he comes with a lot of baggage, right?
Yep.
I mean, the Wanda baggage it's a joke. I mean, you remember the scene in Coming to America where Eddie Murphy's coming through the airport in New York City, coming through JFK? that level of baggage, right? The sad thing is you know I'm right.
Yeah.
You know, so how does that get handled at the Bernabeu? How does that get handled with Florentino Perez, who's a man that likes his own baggage? How does Zidane handle that? Because Zidane, for me, will be not that he's hard-nosed, but he's all business. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, so he's serious.
Exactly. So what is that going to mean for Icardi going there? But I do think Icardi is the exact replacement for Karim Benzema. And he's a better, let's be honest, he's a better replacement. I think so, even Benzema at the top of his game is not quite as good as Mauro Icardi, because Mauro Icardi has the ability to touch the ball three times in a match and score a hat trick. He just has that ability. So I think Icardi's a lock. And I think Icardi's going to come over for, and I'm putting a number on it, somewhere around 80 million. Right.
That's respectable.
So that's 130 million already spent. So they're going to have 170 million left. Now you start to ask yourself, are they going to bring in Eden Hazard? That move's been rumored for 2 years.
I personally think it all depends on how Chelsea end the season. Mm-hmm. If they don't qualify for the Champions League or win Europa League, I mean,
almost a lot.
Or Hazard, would you? Yeah, I mean, shoot. I mean, what is he? 27, 28, and if Real Madrid come at the door asking you to come and, you know, obviously have a better chance of winning the Champions League, you know, why would you reject them?
Rob, I'll tell you, I don't know that it's a Chelsea Champions League thing. I don't know that if Chelsea does make the Champions League that he stays, because he's going to definitely be at the Champions League going to Madrid, and he's going to be playing in front
So he's leaving regardless after this season.
You know, that's my issue. I don't know that he is definitely leaving.
If you were him, I would say 100% I'm leaving.
Yeah, I think he would. And I got to tell you, at the same time, if I'm Chelsea, and this is one where I wish I had Alex Goldberg on speed dial right now, because if I'm Chelsea, I'm happy to see him go. I'm going to sell him north of 100 million euro, right? I'm definitely going to get 100 million for him. How can you not get 100 million for Eden Hazard? He's arguably one of the top 10 players in the world, okay? I mean, we can have that debate if you want, but he's arguably one of those guys. So you're going to get 100 million for him as Chelsea. You know, they're going to take their 130 million, what's left of their balance on their ledger. They're going to spend it on Hazard. They're going to get their number 10. They're going to get their guy, right? And Chelsea's going to have the ability to move on and move forward, whether it be with Mauricio Sarri or not. I just think that, let's say that those are the two moves that are made, the two big Galactico moves. And you can see Real Madrid making a Galactico move like that. If those are the two moves that are made, Zidane has one hell of a job ahead of him next year, because for me, I've always felt like the Chelsea collapses that we've seen over the past few years have all been in part or mostly on Eden Hazard's shoulders because of the way he's handled himself and the way he's handled the locker room. And I've said that's not a secret that we're talking about tonight. So you get a head case in Eden Hazard, in my opinion. You get a documented head case in Mauro Icardi. You get all the pressures that the Santiago Bernabeu puts on you, the white handkerchiefs and all, right?
Because I think, and rightly so, I mean.
Oh, yeah.
But think about it. What other club in the world has more pressure than Real Madrid?
I don't think there is there one. I don't think so.
I think they're at the top of the hill.
Yeah. So that pressure on Zidane, that pressure on the players is massive. And I don't know that two head cases like Eden Hazard and Mauro Icardi are going to be the best moves when you look at the big picture, right? I think a guy like Paulo Dybala, as much as I don't want to see him leave Juventus, I think a guy like Dybala is a better move for Real Madrid because, you know, the rumor is he does have problems with Allegri in the locker room, but you don't see that come outside of the locker room. So I think, and you don't see a visible, I'm mailing it in out of Paulo Dybala week in and week out, right? I mean, we've seen Eden Hazard mail it in on the pitch to the point where we've looked at him and said, yeah, you're totally mailing it in. We never see that out of Dybala. So I think Dybala becomes a better move than Eden Hazard, strictly because of the stability that Dybala would have over. Also, there's a little bit, he's a little bit younger. I mean, a couple of years, it's not much. But I think that that's possibly a better move. And as much as I don't want to see him go, there's a potential that could happen.
So you're saying, in general sense, is you would get a, if you were Zidane, you would try to get a player that is good, but also has a great attitude in himself.
Exactly.
Doesn't matter how talented he is.
I'll tell you right now, the best move Zidane can make is get a guy like Giorgio Chiellini. And it'll never happen. Don't get me wrong.
Obviously not. Yeah,
but,
yeah.
But that's the stability that I'm talking about. You can bring in Icardi, Hazard. You can bring all the head cases you want. You get some strong-willed guys like Gigi Buffon and Giorgio Chiellini in that locker room, and everything will line up. So that's going to be the key. And I think that's where Zidane, you know, with this $300 million, now $250 million, depending on what they spend, I think they need to bring in not only, obviously, talented players, Galacticos, like we're talking, right, in guys like Icardi and Hazard, but stability, mental stability, leadership, okay? Someone that leads. And I think if you bring that person in, then you can bring in the Icardis and you can bring in the Hazards and you can bring in whatever head case. You've already got Thibaut Courtois as a head case there. You can keep those guys there, but you've got somebody inside the locker room that does not have to be Zidane that says, listen, straighten up or you're out. And I think that will be the biggest key for Zidane moving forward when he selects his players and he goes on his shopping spree this summer. So, Rob, let's leave it there for a moment. Let's switch gears to Italy. We had the pleasure yesterday of interviewing one of my favorites, somebody I've listened to on SiriusXM. He's been on there time and time again. Writes for 442, writes for Bleacher Report, writes for Flow Sports. The first Juventus guest, true Juventus guest that I can think of that we've ever had in the 5 years. So it made me happy to talk to him. But it was a great experience. I think you and I both enjoyed it. And without further ado, Rob, I would like to play the Adam Digby interview. Joining us now on Low Limit Football from 442 Bleacher Report and Flow Sports, Mr. Adam Digby. Adam, welcome to the show. I want to start out with a question based on a tweet that you had earlier. And the tweet reads something like this. It was about the Juve-Genoa match and the loss, first loss of the season for Juve. Going unbeaten through the entire 11-12 campaign was a remarkable achievement for Antonio Conte, which was something you pointed out. But the second part of the tweet is something I want to talk about. Some of the current squad are proving they're nowhere near the standard required of a Juventus player. Time to move them on. I want to ask you, because this tweet struck a chord with me, because after watching today's match, the ones that stood out to me were Alessandro and Daniele Rugani. Sandro, especially when you compare it to what Spinazzola did midweek against Atleti, and Rugani has never really looked like that comfortable breakout center defender that we were all hoping he would be. Many are even saying they should have let Rugani go and kept Caldara instead. But moving forward here, what are your opinions on these two players in particular, and are they the two players that you kind of were thinking of when you made that tweet?
Yeah, I think they are. With Rugani, for me, when he came back to Juve from Empoli, he was highly touted. He was really highly respected. He looked very sharp in a lot of Empoli's games in the two previous seasons, one in Serie B, one in Serie A. And he's never, well, not never, that's unfair. He started to progress. We could see him slowly improving, but he's, over the past two seasons, I would say he's not improved in any way at all. And all too often, he comes up short in games like he did today. He's very, very timid. And to be a defender at the highest level, you need to be decisive. You need to know what you're supposed to be doing and then commit to it. And I think the second Genoa goal today was the exact opposite of that. He backed off and backed off and backed off. And then he turned the wrong way to create space for Pandev and give him the opening to take the shot that led to that second goal. He's just a flawed player to me. Sadly, I do think a lot of that is the pressure that comes with playing for Juventus. And with any young player, until you see them in a Juventus shirt and see them doing it week in and week out for Juventus, you never know if they're going to be able to cope. I think we saw that a little bit last year with Bernardeschi. He wasn't up to it at all, really, and he was rightly benched. And then this summer, he's really kicked on and matured, and he looks like a far, far better player. Spinazzola, we're seeing it now. He looked much like Rugani with Empoli. He looked excellent at Atalanta. But until you see it at Juventus, you never really know. And Rugani really hasn't done that. And with Sandro, it's almost the opposite. He came in, he was excellent right away. Straight away, everybody was saying he should be starting games over Patrice Evra. Eventually, he did that, so much so that Evra moved on to Marseille and then West Ham. And he, since the start of last season, when he was strongly linked with a move to Chelsea, and it seems as if he expected to complete that move, he's not looked the same at all, and he's been completely outplayed over the past few weeks by Spinazzola, who against Atletico Madrid was excellent in his Champions League debut. And he's one for me where I think both, to be honest, both Rugani and Sandro are players where Juventus could probably sell them on this summer, make a profit on both, and do quite well out of the deals, because I think people are still convinced that both are very good players.
So, you know, Adam, you mentioned them trying to make a good sell. This is actually a perfect segue to my next question, because obviously you're looking at Juventus and in the transfer window coming up soon in the summer, you know, they do have to make a lot of great changes. I would say perhaps in the midfield and obviously when it comes to defense as well. You're talking about Sandro and Rugani, you know, trying to make a profit off that. And obviously the big one, I think, the big rumor that has been speculating over the last few weeks is try to get Matthias De Ligt from Ajax for a ridiculous amount of money. I mean, do you feel that that would be the right direction that Juventus should go and try to expand their depth in the defense? Or do you feel that they need to really improve much more and focus more on the attack or in the midfield as well?
I think reinforcements in defence. I think as we saw on Tuesday night, if you say that Cancelo, Bonucci, Chiellini, Spinazzola is the starting back four, I don't have any problems with that. I think that's excellent, to be honest. I think Bonucci's slowly starting to... I thought he was really good on Tuesday, and I don't think he's got enough credit for that, because at times, including today, he's been awful, really. But he was very good on Tuesday. And when he plays with Chiellini, largely he is. I think, obviously, in the summer, Cáceres will probably leave. He's only on a short-term contract as a stopgap. Rugani, if he really does need to be moved on. And I think we probably see Andrea Bazzali retire this summer. So you're definitely lacking in depth in defence. But somebody like Matthias De Ligt, and I think if you can find a veteran Italian player to come in and be the fourth choice, I think you'd be absolutely fine then in defence. And then, yeah, midfield is the one, isn't it, after that? I think in attack, you don't really need anything. You need to make a decision over Paulo Dybala, perhaps. Yeah. But with Mandzukic, Moises Keane, Douglas Costa, Bernardeschi, Cuadrado, I think there's more than enough depth there to not really, even if you did sell Dybala, I don't think you need an attacking addition. I think you need to concentrate on bolstering the backup defence and then the midfield.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And Joe, I mean, you can jump in if you want as well.
Yeah, because I wanted to follow up. I think one of the big decisions that they're going to have to make in the summer, wouldn't it be, Adam, between Dybala and Mandzukic? Mandzukic starting to get up in age. He's looked a little slower in his step. Dybala has a huge upside, but really has had a lackluster season for, you know, by his standards. So isn't the Juve decision, past, let's say, midfield, the Dybala-Mandzukic quandary and what to do with one or the other?
I think it is, and I think under normal circumstances you would look at that and think it's a no-brainer. Paulo Dybala's 24, 25. He's massive upside, as you say. He's got bags of talent, bags of potential, and he's a bona fide star of the future. Mario Mandzukic is in his 30s. He's clearly in the decline. But then you actually sit and watch Juventus games week in and week out, and the front three works best when it's Mandzukic, Ronaldo and Bernardeschi. I don't think there's any question of that. I think that's why Allegri turned to those three on Tuesday night, and he was rewarded with an excellent win. I think the problem is Ronaldo wants to start on the left but be able to swap into the middle. and Mandzukic is the best player to facilitate that. And that only leaves a role on the right wing, which Dybala isn't suited to. And it's not a criticism of Paulo Dybala. It's not a knock on Paulo Dybala's talent in any way. He just doesn't fit alongside Cristiano Ronaldo. And that's not a bad thing. We saw during his time at Real Madrid, Gonzalo Higuain didn't fit alongside Ronaldo. Completely blanking. That was somebody else I was thinking. Oh, Alvaro Morata didn't fit alongside Cristiano Ronaldo. And they've both gone on to enjoy success elsewhere. I think Dybala will be excellent wherever he goes. But for me right now, with Ronaldo and with Juve needing to capitalise on the fact they have got Ronaldo, it's time to move him on perhaps and to look at something else. And I think bringing the money that would generate would enable you to heavily invest in midfield and make a real marquee signing there.
You know, it's kind of interesting that you mentioned trying to move Dybala on, because many people looked at him as the future of Juventus, you know, wearing the number 10, such a number that is such historic in the history of Juventus. But, you know, is it that really considered that you would have to move such a talented player? And yeah, I agree. I think in any club that he would play, be it Barcelona, Real Madrid, or in England or anywhere, he would fit very well. But do you think it is too soon, or do you feel that it is the perfect moment for him, considering the moment that Juventus are in at the moment, focusing on Cristiano Ronaldo?
I think it's one of those really tough decisions that you've just got to make. I think it's a real shame, but that's kind of just where it is. I mean, in the 80s, Juve had Michael Laudrup, and they had to sell him to make room for Michel Platini. It wasn't a knock on Michael Laudrup, who's a fantastic player, and he's known everywhere. He's an icon of the sport in Italy and in Denmark as well, and in Holland too. He was excellent, but he just didn't fit in the team at the time, and he needed to be moved. And that is the same kind of thing. It doesn't seem to work at all. And for me, it would be best for everybody concerned if he was sold on. I'm not saying in any way to knock on Dybala. I think when you've got Cristiano Ronaldo, who's 34, he'll be 35 before the end of next season, you have to capitalise on the chance that brings you. And I think before Ronaldo, I would never suggest selling Dybala. I think he was the future of Juventus, but the future is very different once you can manage to bring in a player like Cristiano Ronaldo, isn't it?
No, 100%. Now, talking about the future, we'll obviously talk about this big draw that Juventus got against Ajax in the quarterfinals. Obviously, knowing Ajax, they did knock out Real Madrid back in the round of 16. And many people want to look at this as perhaps really an easy draw, but far from it. I think it's one of the hardest draws that Juventus can get. Obviously, in comparison to other teams, it's not exactly the hardest, but, you know, it's still a respectable draw for Juventus, and you would hope that they would advance to the semifinals if they do displace Ajax.
Yeah, I think before the draw took place, I think if you were given a choice of Ajax, Manchester City, or Barcelona, you would take Ajax every time, wouldn't you, I think?
Yeah.
Again, it's not really a knock on Ajax, is it? But if you get to the last eight of the Champions League and you get drawn against Ajax, you would hope, when you're a team hoping to win the competition, that you would progress. I think it's one of those things where everyone sees it as being disrespectful to Ajax by saying that Juventus should go through. But to me, Ajax are a very good team. They're not in the last eight by accident. They did eliminate Real Madrid. But there's a difference between being a very good team like Ajax, or like Atletico Madrid even, and being a team who were built to win the Champions League and have Cristiano Ronaldo. You have to think that you will progress every time. And I think that's the one thing that Ronaldo has brought to Juventus, is that that expectation that he expects to score goals and he expects to win matches, regardless of who they're lining up against. And I think that mentality is what it takes to win the Champions League. And I think Juventus should be looking to eliminate Ajax, perhaps not comfortably, but you would back them to go through if they play to their best. And I think that the fact that Ajax did beat Real Madrid is probably good for Juventus, because it will stop them from underestimating them and make sure they will take it seriously and will give their best to go through, rather than, oh, it's only Ajax, it could have been much worse, we'll knock these off easily. I think it's probably a good thing they've sprung their surprise already, probably a little bit like Roma. When they got through against Barcelona, it made sure that Liverpool didn't take them too lightly. They knew that they were going to have to be given a good game, and they were going to have to deliver if they were going to win against Roma. And it's very much the same thing for me. Ajax are very good, but Juventus should be better.
100%. 100%. So now looking into the future as well, obviously at the end of the season, you know, Juventus are going to wrap up perhaps their eighth straight Scudetto. You know, they did get knocked out of the Coppa Italia, but they still have the Champions League into place. You know, obviously, I think many people would have to agree and say that if Juventus do not win the Champions League, it's a failure. I think anyone would agree with that as well. But, you know, what does this mean now for Juventus if they fail to capture this Champions League, even after everything that they've done to help facilitate Ronaldo? And, you know, what does this mean for a manager like Max Allegri, who, you know, who's already on the hot seat, even at the start of the season?
I think it's very difficult because signing Cristiano Ronaldo, especially at the age that he's at, it gives you a very small but great opportunity to win the Champions League. That's purely the reason why he was brought in. It was very clear from the very start. The club have spoken about it. They made a number of moves that were most definitely short-term planning, like bringing back Bonucci and selling Caldara was to win now. Spending all the money on João Cancelo to play at right-back when Juve had comfortable cover at right-back but wanted to improve because they needed to capitalise on Cristiano Ronaldo. And it's hard to say if they don't win the Champions League, it'll be a failure. But if they don't win the Champions League while Cristiano Ronaldo is a Juventus player, that surely it has to be seen as a failure. And you've really only got, when he's going to be 35, you've really only got this year and next year to do that, don't you? Because he is going to start declining at some point, however much of an alien he might appear to be at the moment. He is human and he will start to struggle a little bit. I think it would be very difficult if Juve didn't win the Champions League to retain Allegri, because I think the need to win it is so great that they would have to look at changing the manager. And I don't think that's a real leap to say that. I think if they would have gone out against Atletico Madrid, I think that would have been almost certain, because going out in the last 16, no matter who you're drawn against, is definitely a failure. And that's, again, that's harsh because Atletico Madrid are so good, but it's you're judged by a different standard when you have Ronaldo, aren't you? And the expectation is that this Juventus is going to win the Champions League, and that's a really difficult thing to contend with.
Now, I do want to jump in here, Adam, because I do have a question about Allegri and talking about whether this season will be a success or a failure. Obviously, the Scudetto, for the most part, is wrapped up. And I want to look at it because we talked earlier about Paulo Dybala and the inability to get him incorporated and to play with someone like Cristiano Ronaldo. For me personally, watching Juve through the year, I feel it is more of a formational situation where Dybala is not able to express himself as he has been in previous times and in previous formations. And I think sometimes for me, the rigidity of Allegri to stick to that 4-3-3 no matter what, although he plugs different players into different spots, we've seen him do that before, is kind of his way of modifying it, but he seems to be married to that 4-3-3. Is it possible that maybe Allegri should consider changing formations to allow Dybala to be incorporated a little bit better? Maybe switching to a 4-2-3-1 with Ronaldo as the top striker and bringing Dybala in as more of an attacking midfielder? I mean, is there something, even maybe, although it would really decimate the ability to use Bernardeschi, Douglas Costa, you know, we forget about Juan Cuadrado, who's been injured. But going back to a 3-5-2, where you could put three central defenders in there, and then you do lose, like I said, that Cancelo would come into that mix as well. But is it possible that maybe a formation change would be better suited for Allegri to basically show how he can change things up and at the same time incorporate somebody like Dybala with Cristiano Ronaldo?
To be honest, I don't think so. I think Juve played 3-5-2 today and it was a complete disaster.
It was.
And Dybala didn't do anything. I think if Dybala was going to make a case for that, he had the perfect opportunity today. Genoa are a poor, poor team. Mm-hmm. They have poor defenders. They don't have a very good midfield. He had a prime opportunity to stake his claim for inclusion, for changing formation, for all of that today. And he was just as bad as he's been all season. I don't think it is down to the formation. I purely think, in a lot of ways, I think really he's gone from being like the star man, the number 10, the future of Juventus, to Cristiano Ronaldo coming in. It's almost as if he's sulking about it permanently. And you look at the way that somebody like Federico Bernardeschi has taken that, and he's really been spurred on by the arrival of Ronaldo, and he looks desperate to impress Cristiano every time he gets the ball. And I think he's done a really good job of that. And I think you look at the way that Real Madrid played with Ronaldo, and that was always 4-3-3. You look at the way Portugal played, that's always 4-3-3. I think 4-3-3 just brings the best from Ronaldo. And then, as you say, the other formations, you're compromising everybody else. You're compromising Ronaldo. You're compromising what the wingers that you can use. I don't think you can make a case for going to 3-5-2 when you look at today and you look at Cáceres came in and Rugani. I wouldn't want to drop anybody out of this team to facilitate space for either of those two. And I just think it's a non-starter, really. I think the 4-3-3 is the best formation for Juventus, for Allegri, for Cristiano Ronaldo, for the entire squad, except Paulo Dybala. And he's not been good enough to warrant that. And I really don't see how, especially at this late stage now, how you can kind of do that in March with Champions League games coming up in April to facilitate a player who's not been at his best since Cristiano Ronaldo arrives. I think you have to stick with what's got Juve this far. You look at the performance they delivered against Atletico Madrid, that up-tempo, high-octane pressing, really going for it with a lot of attacking intent. If Juve play like that all the time, then in the Champions League at least, then even if they don't win the Champions League, I think you can make a case that Allegri's done his best and that the squad needs a few more additions to go on then and win the Champions League next season. If they play the way they did the first, like that dour, defensive, negative approach, then no, you have to make a change. But as for the formation, to be perfectly honest, Paulo Dybala doesn't deserve it. He's shown nothing to me to warrant changing a formation that would suit nobody but him. And I think when Juve have played that formation, it is still not done enough to even make you think, well, maybe we've been a bit unfair on Dybala, maybe if we changed it. There's just nothing in him that suggests that it would be worth it to me.
Okay. I do want to close with one more question. I want to go back to Cristiano Ronaldo because he's in the middle of a fantastic Capo Cannonieri race, being led by the elder statesman in Fabio Quagliarella with 21 goals so far in the season. He's had the man just keeps doing it. And if I remember correctly, he got called up by Mancini to the Italian national team for the Euro qualifiers this week, which I think is fantastic for him. And he's really earned it. Mm-hmm. But Quagliarella at 21 goals, Cristiano at 19, Piatek over at AC Milan at 19, Zapata at 17. With Allegri focused on resting Cristiano Ronaldo, you know, and focusing mainly on the Champions League because everything else has been settled, is Ronaldo still capable of winning this Capo Cannonieri title, or is this Quagliarella's to lose?
Absolutely, Cristiano. What is he, 2 goals behind? Would you really be surprised if he splashes a hat-trick next week and takes the lead, really?
Never.
I think the two things that really give me this firm belief that he'll still do it are, last Friday he was rested for the first time in Serie A. It was the first time he wasn't used at all in 90 minutes, and he scored a hat trick against Atletico Madrid. And I think, well, he's just had a rest against Genoa, so what is he going to do next week? And then at the press conference yesterday before the Genoa game, Allegri was asked about why he wasn't calling up Cristiano for the Genoa game. And he said he'd met with Cristiano Ronaldo on Friday and they had discussed, debated and agreed how Cristiano's workload will be managed between now and the end of the season. So to me, that's Allegri and Ronaldo having a discussion and Ronaldo figuring out how many games it's going to take him to win the Capo Cannonieri. And I think we'll see an even more determined and even more hungry Cristiano Ronaldo in the games that he does play, knowing that he's not going to play in some of these games now. Mm-hmm. I think I wouldn't be surprised in any way if he's just as sharp on Sunday next week as he was on Tuesday night against Atletico Madrid. And I think that's something to look forward to and to look out for over the rest of the season, is the fact that now he's agreed with Allegri that he is going to sit out some games and which games he is going to sit out. So he will come into the team knowing that either he's not going to play next week or he's got this week and next week, but then he's going to take a rest. And we know how determined he will be to win that title and to say, look, I've done it in three different countries after England and Spain. And let's be honest, and Lionel Messi's only ever done it for Barcelona. that we know how he thinks. We know that's what he's doing. And I think we'll see a really desperate Cristiano Ronaldo, almost, to desperate to impress, desperate to score goals, and desperate to upset Fabio Quagliarella, which will be a shame, really, because I think Quagliarella is great, but I really don't see him having enough goals to hold off Cristiano Ronaldo if he is determined to win that title.
I agree, and knowing the competitiveness of Cristiano Ronaldo, I'm sure the debate was the big part of that discussion. It wasn't much of an agreement.
It was very carefully chosen words that Allegri used at the press conference, and you could tell it wasn't just, oh, Cristiano, you're going to be resting against this team, and this team. Oh, okay, boss. It definitely didn't seem like he was saying it had gone like that. It was very much we debated it, and then we agreed.
No doubt. Adam, thank you again for coming on the show and joining us tonight. An absolute pleasure. And we look forward to speaking with you and following you on Twitter in the future.
No problem. Thank you, guys.
And that was Adam Digby from 442. Just a great, great interview. Can you imagine, Rob, being in that locker room with the discussion between Allegri and Cristiano Ronaldo? And, Allegri says, no, we're going to rest you. And Ronaldo, to an extent, uses like a Jedi mind trick. It says, no, you're not going to arrest me. And Allegri goes, no, I'm not going to arrest you. They keep moving on, man.
I think they're using reverse psychology, huh?
Exactly. That, and I feel bad for Fabio Quagliarella, because you could easily see, like Adam said, you know, he gets mad. This race is starting to get away from him. I'm going to pop in a hat trick. You know, we'll just go score 3-4 goals. No problem at all. I was mistaken, because earlier in the show, I said that Juve lost to Bologna. And it,
no, it was Genoa.
Yeah, and it was Genoa. So I did make that mistake, and I wanted to clarify that. So, Rob, we've got a couple of topics we're going to talk about tonight. And I know we're starting to run short on time because we spent a lot of time on Zidane. But we didn't do trivia yet. So let's give the folks a trivia question that we can answer for them in a few minutes. And it's your honor.
Absolutely. So we're going to talk about Messi and Ronaldo.
Okay.
As surprising as that might be, we're going to talk about both of them. So Messi, as many people have already know, scored a hat-trick against Real Betis yesterday. Mm-hmm. Three wonderful goals, I have to say, Joe. I don't know if you saw the highlights, but three wonderful goals.
I did, and I've got BeIN Sports on in the background here, and I saw them again. So, yeah, I definitely saw the goals.
That brings his total of hat-tricks to 51.
Okay.
51 hat-tricks. Only one short of his perceived rival, Ronaldo, who has 52.
Okay.
So Messi needs one more hat trick to match Ronaldo for most for career hat tricks between both of them. Men. However, the question I want to ask you is, for both,
mm-hmm.
out of those 51 and 52 hat tricks respectively, how many times were they scored against different teams that were scored that both Messi and Ronaldo have scored hat tricks more than once?
So are you looking for answers of teams, or are you looking for
the number of teams that Messi and Ronaldo, essentially, how many times how many different teams has Messi scored more than just one hat trick on?
Okay.
And the same with Ronaldo.
Okay, more than one hat trick against the same team. Wow.
Yep.
Okay.
And there's a lot. There's a few. Right. Should I say there's a few where Messi has scored more than one hat trick against some of these teams.
Okay. I don't know why, but I feel like the number for Messi is going to be higher than Ronaldo. But that's just me. But that's where I think it is. So, all right, let's come back to that. We're going to come back to that in about 10 minutes, Rob. I know we're going to cut things a little short here tonight. I want to talk about the Champions League draw real quick. We'll spend some time on that. Obviously, you know, one of the big things that happened about the Champions League draw was obviously the dramatic 3-0 victory for Juve over Atleti. That, the Ronaldo hat trick, another one of these teams, and that's going to be one of the answers, I'm sure. Just a massive performance out of them. We saw a huge performance out of Ajax, knocking off Real Madrid. We saw Manchester United with 3 goals in Paris, knock out PSG. So some real drama in this round. We saw a great tie between Liverpool and Bayern Munich to eliminate Bayern. No German teams moving forward here in the Champions League. So our final 8 teams we have 4 English teams: Tottenham Hotspur, Manchester City, Liverpool, Manchester United. We have Barcelona, the sole team from Spain left. We have Juventus, the sole team from Italy left. We have Ajax, and we have Porto. We have eight teams. And when you look at the field, you know, aside from the four English sides, you know, not counting Liverpool, United, City, and Spurs, historically, you're looking at six of eight teams that are traditional in this tournament, which I think is a neat little thing. I believe the bookmakers right now still have Manchester City as the top choice, although, you know, going into one of our topics coming up in a minute, that could become in question. So, Rob, you know, I didn't get a chance to write this article, and I don't know that I will before the first matches come up after the international break. We normally do an article every year where we rate our confidence picks. So I think we'll kind of shoot from the hip on this one, Rob, real quick, and just discuss this. For confidence picks, given the choices, I'll give you coaching, goaltender, defense, midfield, and forward. So those five. I'm not going to ask you to rank them all. I'm going to ask you maybe what your top is going to be in terms of goaltender, coach, goaltender, midfield, striker, and defense. So right. let's start with coach. Okay.
All right, with coach, I think there has to be just one obvious one. I think it has to be Pep Guardiola.
I agree.
I think Pep Guardiola stands about everyone.
I agree. I think Allegri is probably second choice there. But I certainly agree. I think maybe even if you wanted to dive a little deeper, I think maybe Jurgen Klopp could be your third choice. But I think the water gets a little muddled after you know, really Pep and Allegri, I would think, in this one. Absolutely. So goalkeeper.
Goalkeeper.
This one's
it's kind of weird how the draw that they have has the best two goalkeepers in the world. But I think for my sake, just because of, for me, I think he's the second best goalkeeper in the world.
Mm-hmm.
The first one is obviously John Oblak at Atleti, and he's not in that competition anymore. So having said that, my second pick, I think, has to be Barcelona and Marc-Andre Ter Stegen.
I would tend to agree with you. I think I almost want to take, you know, I think it's Ter Stegen too, but I think this is a much closer choice between Ter Stegen, De Gea, and Alisson over at Liverpool. I think those are definitely your top three. I think there's a precipitous step after these three down to Chesney, to Ederson, to even Casillas at this point, who, you know, is not the same goalkeeper he was, but I think that's kind of where we got to. Let's talk defense.
Defense is a tough one. I think it's Juve.
I do too.
I still think it's Juve. I still think that those defenders that you have, you know, obviously Alexandro, Joe Cancelo, Bonucci, Chiellini, Barzagli, Spinazzola, I think you still have some depth in there. I'm going to go with them. I think it's Juve, then Barcelona in a close second.
And the thing is for me is I think it's Juve also. I think Barca, I don't know that I want to put Barca second. I do like the defenders at Tottenham Hotspur. I do think that they're an option. I also, you know, we talked about Matthias De Ligt over and over again. I think Ajax, you know, plays defense, you know, fairly well also. And I think they need to be in the discussion, but I think it's Juve, and then there's a deep step off to second place. So let's go midfield. Midfield right now, hard to not take Manchester City, but I guess Kevin De Bruyne, really the questions surrounding his health are going to be a big part of this, don't you think?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think it's a one-off between them and probably Juve or Barcelona. I think any one of those three, if you were to rank them differently, no one would be surprised. But if I had to choose one, I have to say City. I think City have the best one. And then it goes to Barcelona, then Juve for me.
I agree. So, all right, let's go to the last one, Strike Force. You know, strikers. Yeah, there's some tough choices here, you know. I mean, City's got Aguero. They've got Raheem Sterling, Leroy Sané. Depending on where you're looking at him, if you're looking at him as a winger, as a striker, or as a midfielder, you could throw him into the mix. Obviously, you're talking about Messi. You're talking about Luis Suarez. Ousmane Dembele has been fabulous lately. Cristiano Ronaldo. We saw what Federico Bernardeschi did in the second round there against Atleti. Arguably, if Atleti was in this competition, we're talking defenses, you could argue Atleti was the best defense. And you saw what they did, you know. And like I said, Ronaldo, Mandzukic, Liverpool, Sadio Mane, you know, Mo Salah, you know, Firmino. There's tons to choose from here. God, as a strike force, you know, hard for me to pick against Messi. For me, I think Juve actually is second here.
Yeah, I would agree. I think it's a coin toss, honestly.
Yeah.
But if I had to choose a side, I'd probably have to pick Barcelona with this one.
Yeah, and you know, and I think City's third. You know, and Liverpool. Well, that is a City or Liverpool. That's a tough choice, right?
Between the two. Yes, Mane, Firmino.
Yeah, I don't know that I'd want to pick. I think it is very, very
close.
I'll pick City
just because I think Aguero brings much more than Salah and Firmino.
I'll go Liverpool, and I don't think either of us are wrong.
Right.
Let's put it that way. So let's obviously we come back, Rob. I don't have the exact date up here in front of me for Champions League, but I want to say it is the second week. I think it's the week of the 10th. Is that right? The 10th and the 9th and 10th?
Something like that.
You know, I'm going to look it up here real quick. I guess I should be a little better prepared as the host. Yep, the 9th and the 10th are when they return. Porto, Liverpool, Spurs, City, Ajax, Juventus, Manchester United, Barcelona, those first two matches. Then they return second legs on the 16th and 17th. Rob, one other thing I want to bring up real quick. Two things. Since we were talking City real quick, obviously City is set to possibly face a 2-year transfer ban right now based on their signing of youth players. This is a similar transfer ban that we saw Chelsea suffer just recently. There's also talk because of financial fair play that Manchester City might not actually be there to play these Champions League matches, which that one I think is a little further down the road than this one. But do you see this transfer ban happening to Manchester City, or do you think
it's water under the
bridge? You think?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, I don't really see this happening. I feel like it's just maybe another what's it called? Not smoke smell. What's it called when you throw
like a smoke screen? Yeah, yeah, like
smoke screen. There you go.
Yeah, you know, according to the article that I've got from TalkSport, its transfer ban of Premier League champions would come less than a month after Chelsea were hit with the same sanctions for 29 breaches of Article 19 of FIFA's regulations. So, you know, for me, I don't know that it's a smokescreen. I do think there's something to this. I think UEFA is always quick to throw out the transfer ban. You know, I think they don't mind throwing it out there and as being like the heavy punishment. We've seen Barca suffer a transfer ban. We've seen Real Madrid suffer it. We've got Chelsea on it. Atleti has sat it as well. I mean, Chelsea. This happens quite a bit. And I don't think it's as much of a smokescreen. I think the financial fair play one, I think, is a major smokescreen. I don't think that one happens at all. But I do see this. I do see this potentially going through, and City being banned for 2 years. And I don't think it's a big deal for them. I think they're the team, as constructed with the age of the players, I think they're in a good spot. And I don't think they necessarily need to go out in the transfer window and do something. So I don't think this would be a big deal for them.
No, absolutely not.
If it did come to fruition. So. Last thing I want to talk about, we're gonna table the FIFA discussion, Rob, for now. We got plenty of time to talk about that. But the big changes at Roma, obviously, Eusebio Di Francesco sacked after Roma was eliminated from the Champions League. They're still struggling in the Italian league at the moment to stay within the Champions League spots. I'm actually calling up the standings right now as we speak. I want to say they're still fourth. They're fifth at this point, so they're outside of it. They're 4 points behind of AC Milan, and they sacked DeFrancisco. Also, Monchi gone as well, going back to Sevilla after spurning Arsenal, which was kind of interesting. But I think this was kind of a long time coming, where DeFrancisco was sort of devoid of ideas, Rob, when he coached his team, and it was unfortunate, you know, because I think in the end, I think Eusebio's a good coach. We saw him do great things at Sassuolo before taking this job. I think it's just the pressure of Roma is just too much. Now we've brought Claudio Ranieri in, who's Romanista himself. So I think this is a good fit for Ranieri. I think Ranieri could possibly, depending on what happens with Inter and AC Milan, because they tend to be a little Jekyll and Hyde, both of them, could sneak Roma back into those Champions League spots. It's still within their grasp, and I think that can happen. I mean, what are your thoughts about everything that happened with Di Francesco, Monchi, you know, and Ranieri himself?
Yeah, no, I think it's obviously been something that has been really complicated to follow. Mm-hmm. At Roma, I think obviously the expectations for Di Francesco after last season was to obviously do much better, and obviously he didn't get that. So this is just a consequence of, unfortunately, the "what have you done for me lately" mm-hmm. Aspect of the game. For Monchi, I think now that's going to be really interesting to see how much he really puts in the effort for the next, for going back to Sevilla. I think obviously Sevilla, having just sacked their head coach, really needs someone to turn the, well, he's obviously not a coach, but someone to really put forward an ambition and get them back to the way that they were as a, you know, as a perennial, you know, not second tier, but I would say like Europa League challenger. Mm-hmm. And with Ranieri coming back, I think it's a good move because, you know, it's a manager that's proved himself at Roma, proved himself all across Europe. And I think it would be a great fit for someone who can come there to stabilize things, I think I would say. Obviously, did not do well at Fulham. So it's going to be interesting to see what happens. I think I'm curious to see how he succeeds over there.
I concur. No doubt about it. So, Rob, we've got since we're on international break now, we've got a list of some friendlies. We've got some European qualifiers. And, of course, because we're on international break, MLS sits outside the international break, so we have an MLS match. Why don't you give us the matches of the week and the trivia answer?
Absolutely. So let's go to the Europe qualifiers. We have Belgium taking out Russia Thursday at 3:45 p.m. We have our own friendly, the United States against Ecuador, Thursday at 8 p.m. We have another Euro qualifier, England against Czech Republic, Friday at 3:45 p.m. We have the Euro qualifier between Italy and Finland, Saturday at 3:45 p.m. In MLS, we have NYCFC taking out LAFC, Sunday at 3 p.m. In the Euro qualifier, we have the Netherlands and Germany taking on each other, a big rivalry, Sunday at 3:45 p.m. And Portugal against Serbia, Monday at 3:45 p.m. And, of course, I think the friendly that we had mentioned at the top of the show, Peru-Paraguay, Friday at 8 p.m. at Red Bull Arena. And we'll be bringing you coverage live from there on Friday.
Yep. Right now, Rob is definitely going to be there. I am just moving some things on my schedule to be able to do that. And one of us will be, at least one of us will be live tweeting that match through our Low Limit Twitter feed. So would love it if you could follow along with us and, you know, and kind of take a look at it. So also, you know, you're catching this on iTunes, you're catching it on Stitcher as well. We'd love it if you would go and give us a review and give us a rating as well. That really helps out the show as well. So, Rob, give us a trivia question again, and let's see if I can pick a number.
Absolutely. So the question was, Messi has scored his 51st hat trick against Real Betis in his career, only one behind Ronaldo, who has 52. Can you name the amount of time, the number of different teams that both Messi and Ronaldo have scored more than one hat trick against?
So it's multiple hat tricks by each individual player.
Correct.
So I think I'm going to put this number at, and it's funny because, you know, with Ronaldo adding the hat trick against Atleti in the Champions League.
It's different teams, by the way. Different teams.
Right. So how many times has Ronaldo scored a hat trick against the same team more than once?
Yep.
And how many times has Messi scored a hat trick against the same team more than once?
Yep.
So I think I'm going to put Ronaldo's number at 11.
Okay.
And I'm going to put Messi's number at 12.
So close.
Was I? Wow.
Yes.
What were they?
Lionel Messi has scored against the following teams more than one. Has scored hat-tricks against the following teams more than once. Mm-hmm. Valencia, Atlético Madrid, Espanyol, Deportivo La Coruña, Sevilla, Osasuna, Real Betis, Levante, Granada, Real Madrid, Malaga. Ronaldo has scored against Sevilla, Atletico Madrid, Celta, Espanyol, Getafe, Real Sociedad, Athletic Bilbao, Deportivo La Coruña, Levante, and Malaga. 11 different times for Messi, 10 different times for Ronaldo.
I was one off on both. That's crazy.
That's crazy, too, how they're both one off in hat tricks and one off between multiple hat tricks against different teams.
But I knew Messi has more than Ronaldo against the same team.
Correct, by one.
Yep. So
Real Betis, the goal against Real Betis actually made him surpass it, Ronaldo. But in fact, Messi has scored 4 hat tricks against Valencia. Cristiano Ronaldo has scored 5 hat tricks against Sevilla as his most, wow, as his best favorite victim.
What a great question. That's an awesome question. So
think about it. 15 goals against a single team.
Crazy. That is crazy. And they've got to hate him. Absolutely.
And guess who's second place, by the way, for Ronaldo? Atleti.
Is it Atleti?
Yeah, he had four different hat tricks, and for Messi, three different hat tricks.
Wow, and they both and Ronaldo needed to score one last week, last Tuesday. So, all right, sir. Without anything left on the docket, let's hit the closing music.
Let's do it.
All right. So, and again, great show tonight. So, for episode 237 of Low Limit Football, special thanks again to Adam Digby for joining us. Next week, we will bring you more information on Euro qualifiers. We'll do friendlies during the international break. We'll bring you more MLS coverage as well. And we'll have a special guest to help us cover it all. So, for episode 237 of Low Limit Football, I am Joe Uccello.
I'm Roberto Rojas.
Thanks for listening, everyone, and good night.